All right, today we have the Holy Relics Second Crusade talk. Of course, it says Holy Relics first. That's just what we're going to talk about. But mainly we're going to focus on is the Second Crusade. So the results and the impacts of the First Crusade. So we left off talking about the First Crusade. Of course, all the atrocities that were committed by the Christians during this time. There was also the impacts of it, the impacts being twofold, that Christians are now in charge of the Holy Land. And that, of course, people, the Arabs and the Muslims, are not going to be happy about this. And the retribution that they feel needed to respond with because of the atrocities committed by the Christians. So we're just going to click ahead here and see some of the things we're talking about. Some of the stuff is a little random, just to be fun to talk about. And then we're going to get going into the Second Crusades after that. So the first one we got here is we're going to talk a little bit about some holy relics. During this time period, we jumped forward 100 years after the First Crusade. So we're now 100 years later. So Jerusalem fell in about 1098. We're now talking the 1100s, 1180s. So during that time, 100 years have passed, Christians from all around the world are making pilgrimage now to the Holy Land because they believe it is a safe place for them to go since now it is controlled by Christians. So pilgrimage has become big. So a lot of these holy relics become more publicized and are found during this time. So this first one here is the Shroud of Turin. Shroud of Turin is still around today. Is believed to be the garment that was placed over the face of Jesus Christ when he was crucified. So that's why you'd be able to make out that face on the Shroud of Turin. There is no substantiated evidence saying that this is what this is. Tests have been done, and they're fairly inconclusive. Go to the next one. This is the Spear of Destiny. We talked about this the other day. This is another one of those holy relics that have gone missing, come back up, gone been missing. No one's quite sure which one's real, which one's not. This one is one that is believed to be the Spear of Destiny, with the middle part of it being one of the nails that nailed in Jesus Christ. Nobody's really quite sure, but these are the powers and the belief that goes with them, which are extremely powerful for the Christians during this time. And this next one here, after you click, is you can see it's a cross on an altar, but inside of the cross you can see pieces of wood, believed to be actual pieces of the true cross, which is the cross that Jesus was crucified on. Back then, there was huge amounts of belief that these relics showed God's belief, God's power, God's will in these people that that held them. The true cross was believed to be in Jerusalem, in control of the army, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So it just showed that they thought they were unbeatable with these relics in their possession. So if you go to the next one, probably the more famous of all relics is the cup that Jesus drank from. And this would be one of the most important relics that people have always gone for. You know, of course, this is a little bit of a joke here. Of which one do you think it is? This plays in with the video clip that you'll watch next from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where it talked about this. This is the Holy Grail, believed that if anybody drank from it, you'd be granted everlasting life. Rumored to have been discovered during this time, but no substantiated proof. So if you click again, you'll see a little video from that movie, towards the end of the movie, in picking what they believe to be the right cup and the wrong cup. So I'll let you watch that. Okay, so you just watched that. So now let's talk about what has happened since the First Crusade. So we talked about it. It's been 100 years since the Christians took control of Jerusalem. A lot has happened there. Christendom has really set itself forward. It started to establish it. So if you click again, here's one of the things that were created. These are organizations, knight organizations. Probably most famously are the Knights Templar. Those are the guys in white with the red crosses on. Those guys show who they are, and most famously because of what they wear. Now, the Knights Templar, if you click again, there's a little video on it, and you can watch that video, and it'll give you a little background. So the Knights Templar, if you click after the video, were founded at the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem. So hence, Knights Templar, Knights of the Temple. Like we said before, known for wearing their white and red. Now, this is a really interesting group. It is a military order of monks. So each one of these individuals had to take the vows of a monk, poverty, that they shall not have relationships with women, all these things, no different than you would see in a monk at the time. However, they would also be warrior monks. They would be, really highly trained warriors in what they do to battle the enemies of their faith, which is kind of an oxymoron, but it just is what it was. This group then became extremely powerful. It was originally set up to provide safety for those who were traveling on the roads to the Holy Land in pilgrimage. They would provide safety the entire way. But in the process, they also created the world's first international corporation and banks. People would deposit their money in Europe. And when you get to the Holy Land, you provide a piece of paper, you would get your money there. This is something that just didn't happen beforehand. So it's a huge deal and impact on the way the world works and has long-lasting impacts. The Knights Templars stay around for hundreds of years. And part of all the money that they raise and percentages of that and providing protection and things like that, they built castles and became extremely powerful. Their influence was huge. They were pretty much the Pope's personal army. These guys were also the elite warriors of the day, almost like Navy SEALs nowadays, but back then. All right, click again, and you shall have these other gentlemen who wore black and white. So you click. Those guys wearing black with the white cross are Hospitallers. These guys are also originally monks that ran the hospitals in Jerusalem. They provide medical aid for those in pilgrimage. Eventually, the business of protecting pilgrims became so big that they joined in that as well. So these are two of the biggest orders of knights throughout the Second Crusade and thereafter that were created in result of the First Crusade. So click again. So now you have this guy. It's a picture of a guy named Saladin or Salahadin or Saladin, depends on your pronunciation. So click again. This guy believed in jihad. Jihad is a commonly misunderstood word, commonly used inappropriately. But what jihad is, if you click, is the struggle is really what it translates to. So it's the struggle to fight against enemies of the faith of Islam. It's actually a tenet in the Quran is the jihad. Now we see it on the news all the time of jihad, of people against America, things like that. That's not what it means. It's simply jihad just means the struggle. And so he was a believer in this. He believed in the struggle against Christianity and the atrocities that they created during the First Crusade, now 100 years later. So you click again. He was also a strong believer in uniting all Muslims under one leader. He was brutal about this. People died suddenly when around him, known that he was a rival. So there's some pretty big things. So he violently tried to unite the Muslim people under his leadership for many years. So click again, and here's one example. So one night, he was actually camping outside of a city where the newly appointed ruler, who was like a 10, 11-year-old boy, refused to let him in. Saladin thought he would become the leader. However, this boy was appointed. So what this boy did, if you click again, is sent in these guys. These would be assassins. Of course, everybody knows who assassins are through the video games and such like that. However, that's not what the term was back then. If you click again, the real term back then was hashishi. The hashishi were the assassins. The word has changed over time from hashishi to assassin. Hashishi, though, is what most people understand now and would probably guess is marijuana. These people were, for better lack of words, were hired mercenaries, hired assassins who would get stoned. That's what would get them to motivate, is being stoned to go do that. So he hired that. It scared him away twice. They got in and almost killed Saladin twice. However, in both times he would retreat. However, they were never able to eventually kill him. And Saladin comes to power after that young ruler, who about 19, dies very suddenly and mysteriously, unbeknownst to anybody. He was poisoned more likely by Saladin. So you click again, and Saladin becomes the leader of the people. Okay, so go ahead and go to the next one. So you can see here a map. This would be the territories of Salahuddin when he gets to the height of his power. So you can see in 1190, this is before he's able to take over Hattin. You see Jerusalem and stuff like this all along the way, Acre. But this map also continues into Egypt. He was also the sultan, the leader of Egypt as well. So we click the next one. So here we go. We're going to talk about this image here. You got of a young boy playing. He's got spots on him. And then being looked at by what looks to be a monk who's actually a doctor at the time and wondering what these spots are and why they're poking him. So you click again. This is the gentleman. You should see a picture of a guy in a mask of who it is. Now, if I haven't switched the presentation, if you drag up there a little bit, you'll be able to see some typing. This is Baldwin the Fourth, King. He is the leper king. Sorry, there's a mistype there. Leper king of Jerusalem. So who Baldwin was, if you click again, you'll see what leprosy is on the mask here. So leprosy is a bacterial disease of the flesh. Pretty brutal stuff. So leprosy is a bacterial and disease infection that comes to people. It literally will begin to originally destroy the nerves. That's why it showed the original picture there. What happened to Baldwin is he was actually playing and noticed no pain. As he grew older, though, that notice of no pain was actually noticed to be that he literally could not feel it, not that he was tough. So couldn't feel the pain because of his nerves were dying due to this disease. As he got older and older, the disease came worse. You can see the boils on the skin. Ears would start to rot off. Body parts would literally fall off of you as you got older. Eventually, you'd lead to inability to walk or control your limbs. You'd go blind and eventually die of this pretty gruesome, awful disease. Back then, it was considered a plague to those who were sinners of some sort. So click again. So what happens is he eventually dies, and power then falls to his sister. His sister is married to a gentleman by the name of Guy de Lusignan, and he will become king. So you see these pictures here of these two people. We're going to watch a movie called The Kingdom of Heaven. Started using pictures of the actors who portray these people, so that way we would have an understanding of who these people were when you watch the movie. So click again. A friend of Guy's is a guy named Reynald de Châtillon. Reynald is also a Templar like Guy and is an avid hater of Saladin. Just absolutely couldn't stand him. Didn't understand why the Christians would even tolerate him. Thought that they were unbeatable. So what happens is Guy orders Reynald to start a war and end the peace that has been upheld by Baldwin IV for numerous years and his relatives before that. So it's almost a 100-year period of peace. So what happens if you click is Reynald breaks the peace and attacks a caravan of pilgrims, Islamic pilgrims. This, of course, breaks the truth and enrages Saladin. Reynald takes some very wealthy and powerful people hostage, puts them in prison, tortures them, and kills quite a few of them. So this absolutely enrages Saladin and gives a reason to go to war because of the breaking of the truce. So click again. And so here's what happens. So here's the Baldwin thing in the wrong place. But there you know, and that's who he is. So here it is, Guy de Lusignan. You can see the depiction of him on the right as the new king of Jerusalem. And we have Reynald de Châtillon, his buddy. So what they do, if you keep clicking here, so you'll get to this desert landscape, is they decide to charge out and stop Saladin themselves. They know Saladin is on its way to Jerusalem. So Reynald and Guy are going to take the army out. And they believe that they are going to stop Saladin before he gets to Jerusalem. So click again. You can see in this picture, it's another picture from the movie, massive army, crusader army. But you can see the landscape, very desert-like, and then what they're carrying is that giant cross that was believed to be the true cross. They actually carried that with them. They thought they were unstoppable with this power, this holy relic of Jesus Christ and their faith. They had not been defeated in battle before, so they thought that, well, they can't be. So they charge out carrying this cross with them. So click again. Problem is they went charging out into the desert without any water during the middle of summer, and suffered the consequences for that. Marched for days and days on end without any sort of food or water. Many of their people collapsed and they got into severe dehydration. So click again, you see they finally actually make it to Lake Galilee. So Reynald and Guy and all their men see this lake and begin to rush towards the lake naturally. Click again. However, sitting at the lake is Salah ad-Din. He knew of the watering holes between Jerusalem and there where he could water and feed his army. However, Guy did not. And so Salah ad-Din waited at the lake for the Crusader army to come. So as soon as they begin to approach the water, if you click again, Salah ad-Din will actually charge and fight them. And once they begin the fight, click and Salah ad-Din will actually set fire to make it even drier and more difficult for the Christian Crusaders to fight. So he increased the dehydration component and the exhaustion component and increased the heat. Also, most of his men were on horseback, which allowed the dust and the noise to increase as well. So completely just out-strategized Guy and the Christian army. So click again, and what this all becomes is known as the Battle of Hattin, this major known battle between Guy de Lusignan and the major armies of Christianity, the major army of Jerusalem, and the Islamic army of Salah ad-Din. Click again. So what happens is the Crusaders will lose. Salah ad-Din absolutely annihilates them. He captures Guy de Lusignan and Reynald and thousands of other knights. He brings Guy to his tent with Reynald, click again, and he offers him a cup of frozen water. Because Guy said he was thirsty, so Salah ad-Din gave him frozen water, which is a unique thing to think of. It's hard to have frozen water out in the middle of the desert back in the 1100s. There aren't freezers around or a 7-Eleven you can run to go get. So he offers him a cup of frozen water. Guy takes it and then passes it to Reynald, who drinks it as well. Now remember, Salah ad-Din started this because he hated Reynald. He wanted to kill Reynald. So in seeing this, Salah ad-Din becomes very angry because he did not offer the water to Reynald. So if you click again, so what he does is he actually beheads Reynald de Chatillon in front of Guy. Absolutely cuts his head off. If you click again, the natural thing that you would think of, you can see in this picture Reynald's head in the hand of Salah ad-Din. The natural thing is Guy thinks that he is next. However, Salah ad-Din does not kill Guy. Salah ad-Din will spare Guy's life and says that kings don't kill kings, which shows an interesting character thing about Salah ad-Din that he would not have gotten on the reverse end. So if you click again, but what Salah ad-Din does do is he executes every living Christian soldier that was captured in that army. This will completely demoralize Jerusalem and destroy the Christian Crusader army on his way to Jerusalem. Click again. So like I said, now it's time for Jerusalem. So Salah ad-Din's army heads south to Jerusalem that is almost defenseless. No army there. Click again. So what happens is in 1188, Salah ad-Din shows up to Jerusalem with 200,000 soldiers. Remember when they attacked, when the Christians attacked Jerusalem 100 years before that, they only had 13,000. So this is way more soldiers than what they had before. I mean, 20 times as many soldiers. So click again. In case you don't know how much that is, that's 303 times the amount of passengers that fit on side of a jumbo jet airplane, a 747. So you can kind of understand the numbers of people in that. So the next, go ahead and go to the next one. What happens then is Jerusalem will surrender to Salah ad-Din. Salah ad-Din offers them truce if they will surrender. Now, you would think here that this is the next story of a bad one for all the times we talked about crusaders and them attacking and then having cities surrender. So let's see what Salah ad-Din does. If you click again, so like it says, what does Salah ad-Din do? Click again. Well, he offered ransom for those who wanted to leave. He welcomed anybody that wanted to leave, and those who were welcome to stay as well. They would have to pay a tax if they stayed. However, you could freely leave. He did not come in and slaughter them. So you click, of course you have these rich people, the knights. How are they going to get out? Well, click, they just pay and they leave. And that's the end of it, and they're gone. However, click, the poor people. What are the poor people going to do? They don't have the money to pay the ransom, so what should they do? Click. Salah ad-Din actually pays for everybody who wants to leave that can't afford it. He pays for it out of his own pocket. Eventually, what will happen to Salah ad-Din is not only become one of the greatest Arabic rulers of all time, he interestingly dies, of course, very powerful, but actually pretty poor. because he used most of his own personal money to finance this conquest, and then also to help finance these people leaving Jerusalem, which is a very interesting shift from what we saw from the Crusaders. So now it's the end of the Second Crusade. The Arabs have retaken the Holy Land, not all of it, but most of it, and Christianity is on the way out. Massive defeat for them. No major army for them anymore in Jerusalem. So, of course, this will segue us to the Third Crusade, where the Christians are not going to stand for that and try to retake the Holy Land.